and backgrounds are to the conformal field theories. I should say just in passing that really, this is generally true, but what we do with time-dependent backgrounds, which is part of what I'll be talking about, is in general somewhat unclear. I don't think we really know what in a time-dependent, a CFT with a Lorentzian target space, which is probably time-dependent, what CFT correlators even mean. But at any rate, these two dimensional conformal field theories give us a sense of what the on-shell configurations are for string theory. So the kind of picture, very crude picture, one might draw is that I, for example, phi is some particular string field, and beta phi is the potential, and the potential could look like this. And these, the minima and the maxima, would give us on-shell configurations. So again, here phi is a field, some scalar field in space-time made up of string modes and maximum potential, and roughly speaking, the minima and maxima would be static configuration of string theory, on-shell configuration of string theory. So the question is how to go off-shell. Well, there are two somewhat standard ways to start probing this regime of the potential B of phi, which you might want to call off-shell. So the first possibility would be to look at scattering amplitudes. So one possibility would be to look at scattering amplitudes of this field. So in particular, if B goes as some power series in phi, which are certainly very close to the minimum or maximum, then I would measure lambda n would be related to some endpoint function V of phi, U of phi, and C of t. So if this is an expansion near some particular minimum, let's say this is phi equals 0, and I want to measure various coefficients in this potential, which would give me some indication as to how to go off-shell, then I can do this, compute the scattering amplitude. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is to, which is really what we're going to do, is look for solutions which interpolate.
So in the first case, you can use this only at the minimum, right? You cannot do it at the maximum.
Yeah, the maximum we run into infrared issues.
Okay.
I mean, often you can sort of extract this infrared issues, but it's definitely fixed here in that case. So the second thing is to look for solutions that interpolate back to either in space. So these would be like domain walls and so forth, or in time, which is, so you imagine I'm sitting here the top of this potential, and I kick it and I start to roll down, and I just study the dynamics of it rolling down. Of course, that's generally quite complicated. In addition to this time of evolution, you can have particle production and things like that, but it's the least thing you can do. Okay, so let me just say, Let me just say a couple more obvious few things about scattering amplitudes. And in particular, let me just remind you about the vertex operators you use. So let me take, for example, string theory on, say, R4 times N6, some nice old school compactification down to four dimensions. And scalar vertex operators I can write as phi bar e to the I a x times o . So scalar vertex operators typically I write down as a product of this momentum factor coming from this part of the CFT and this operator coming from the compactification part of the CFT. And this needs to be more, for this to be something I can add to the world sheet action, this needs to be a marginal operator. For it to be a physical operator, it needs to be marginal. And delta of e to the I k dot x is k squared over 2. So this means that delta of O has to be 1 minus k squared over 2. So in particular, we can break up whether O is relevant or irrelevant is going to depend on the sign of the k-squared, and therefore whether the field is tachyonic or marginal, tachyonic or massive or something in between. So in particular, if O is relevant, k-squared over 2 is greater than 0. And in particular, I'm using the East Coast metric. So this means m squared is less than 0 in the tachyon. If O is marginal, I have a massless field. If it's exactly marginal, I have a flat direction. And then finally, if O is irrelevant, I have a massive field. Okay, so nothing you probably don't already know. So the picture here, again, would be, well, let's imagine I have some potential landscape. I have some flat or almost flat direction, you know, for driving minimum here. So these are 1, 2, V. This, of course, would be case A. Fluctuation in this case would be case B, and fluctuations along this direction would be case C. Okay. So in particular, so that's one statement, but secondly, it starts to sound plausible that if I want to say start here and go down here, it would make sense to give a vacuum expectation value to this relevant operator. And once you do that, you expect that the field theory should is no longer scale invariant and should start to flow under a normalization to the constraint. So in particular, so sweeping outside, out V of phi seems to correspond to general 2D field theories. So is this the correct arena? I'll mention that this has been made somewhat precise for open string field theory. due largely to Witten, something called boundary string field theory. So Witten was the background of the intended formulation of open string field theory, which really just does exactly this, at least for, it writes down some functional, which is a function of at least the relevant and marginal operators of the theory, what to do with the irrelevant operators and so forth.
So when you add this operator, right, you don't use, you require this operator to be,
you compute the dimension in such a way that you don't break informal invariance, right?
Well, so,
but in
the
field theory, the expectation value of one-point correlation functions vanish, right? So we're
right
there by.
So I'm speaking very heuristically. I'll make this all very precise and correct. The point is that, I mean, you might, this thing is just sort of, yeah, if you really solve the equations of motion, this thing is rolling down, then it should, the full solution should somehow be a consistent time-dependent background in and of itself. And then the question I'm about to ask is that time-dependent somehow related to the normalization group properties? So the next thing I want to do to motivate this is to look at something more, review something more recent, which is open string tachyonic egg tachyons. In particular, the work of Sen. Sen pointed out that if I have some unstable D-ring, this means that I have an open string tachyon and Sen's conjecture, which has been borne out by many calculations and much physical insight, states that what I have is, if this is my tachyon, T, here's V of T, this maximum here at T equals 0 is the state of the D-ring. And the minimum is the state of no D-ring. And this difference is the tension. Confirmed by calculations in string field theory, both Witten's cubic string field theory and boundary string field theory. So, here I have some tachyon, which is related to some relevant operator. I can go to string field theory and compute a potential for this and realize the scenario. But I want to talk about the perspective that I think was to initially to Kutuzov, Harvey, and Martinek, who said, well, imagine I in particular take, say, a D25 ring and look how it decays to a D 24 ring. You can imagine some turning on some particular tachyon with a profile in one spatial direction and look at this decay. And I said, well, I can take, let me take my conformal field theory and add to it an operator like that. This flows to a new fixed point. In fact, in this case, the flow is the normalization group flow is known was computed exactly by Soler, Pilcher, and Warner. I think. This flows to a new fixed point, and basically, what happens is lambda goes to infinity. So, what lambda does to infinity here, I now have, this induces potential on the boundary. Which looks like this. And so now the strings want to sit at the minimum of the potential. So it looks indeed like a D25 range to get your D24 range, open strings and all this. Okay. So the question I want to ask is there a so there's some indication that so here the beginning and the end points of the renormalization group flow seem to begin the end points of RG are the are seem to be the same as the endpoints of the actual tachyon condensation up to some additional particle reduction, which I'm not dealing with. So you might then want to ask, is there a more precise relation? It certainly seems natural. I'll mention, and there are other quantities, I should say in passing, there are other renormalization group quantities which relate to actual space-time, which relate to the space-time properties. In particular, the tension here is related to the boundary G function of Affleck and Ludwig. And that seems to be a similar story for localized closed string tachyon condensates, as was discussed by Nimola, Hedrick, Schumeris, and I'm suddenly blanking on the other name. So the question is there a more precise relation? There are certainly quantities, renormalization quantities, which relate to some space-time information we'd like to probe this further. The problem is that RG flow is governed by first-order equations. Normalization group flow is governed by first-order equations, which in particular means we need a single, for one coupling, we need a single initial condition, namely how we change the coupling to operators in the world G field theory. So when we want to understand renormalization group flow, we start with some fixed point theory, and then we perturb it slightly by relevant and irrelevant operators, and we ask how does the theory flow. But space-time equations of motion are certainly not first order. So actual target space equations of motion are second order or higher order. So the couplings in two dimensions are related to the vacuum expectation values of fields, but I also need first orders. So I need two initial conditions instead of one. So something must be going on here. The relation can't be too precise. I'll also ask finally, what's the square root of closed strings? For localized tachyons, there's a relation which is somewhat similar to this relation in attention to the G function. Namely, there's a boundary piece to the C function which becomes related to the, which does, although the overall central charge in the localized tachyon decay doesn't change, there's a change, a boundary contribution to the central charge which does, and it's related to the shift in the ADM mass of the configuration. So there should be, you might wonder if there's not a similar relation also for closed strings. In fact, it's closed strings that we'll talk about mostly. Any questions before you want?
What boundary are you talking about?
What
boundary are you
talking about? Oh, I'm sorry, the boundary extension. So I have a localized tachyon, and I can look at the C function to find Z by segment. And that C function is some space time integral which has boundary terms.
But like that, so can I think of this like, you know, an orbifold? So tachyons that come in just orbifolds?
Right? Yeah, there's a localized, the kinds of things that.
So what is the boundary? So
the boundary space time. So I have some orbifold in the middle here, and I can go out to the boundary of, say, my C mod Zn or whatever. Mm-hmm. And when I compute, when I look at the spacetime at the beginning and the end of the decay process, you can argue that the C function defined as an integral over spacetime has boundary terms, and those boundary terms change. And those changes are related to the shift in the ADM mass solutions. Well, actually, when you look at least the effective action of the tachyon, the effective action is hybrid of the terms. So we have to deal with this somehow. I'm not going to say anything about that. So I'll work at the root of the extension. But yeah, you have to at least understand how to deal with the hybrid. What?
Is it the mystery?
To some degree, yeah. When you can compute them.
To fill the relations between.
What? Sorry, what?
You were talking about higher order corrections.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just mentioning that field relations can be an issue.
Yeah. That's right. That's also. I'm going to cheese all that by just doing a derivative expansion and all the way out.
You wrote this expression here about the change in the central charge of the boundary,
yeah.
not in the bulk.
Yeah.
How precise is that?
I think there's some processing that goes from one to the other, but I think it's reasonable. They made it reasonably precise. They argued that at least you look at the C function. There's some. What I think they looked at is actually how it changes over time, related to the body energy it's getting off.
From the Wurzschild perspective, it's kind of strange. Are you trying to say that there is a kind of a normal CFT which describes the quantum space, and then there is some other CFT that describes the boundary?
No, I'm just saying that when I write down the C function in terms of the space-time fields, it's an integral over space-time, and that integral can have boundary terms.
So that has nothing to do with the Wurzschild CFT. This is just, in a sense, something like.
Well, it should be related to the Wurzschild CFT because you write it down as an integral field over the target space.
Yeah, but you don't normally think about having boundary couplings out of infinity.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that's the one of the differences, right? When we normally write up in target space, or even if it's got a D-brand in it, we don't normally think about the boundary part of that Wurzschild action and relating to just what's happening out there.
This is about space-time boundary contribution, not a Wurzschild boundary contribution.
I don't know, but that's what I'm looking at.
I'm just saying that there's some relation. It's not going to have
so this is a C of.
So I look at the central charge of the conformal field theory, and I can write it down. It's essentially the space-time action. And I can look at how things go off to infinity under tachyon decay. And is that somehow related to, that's related to the EMS? The shipping of the EMS? I mean, the bulk, it's localized that kind of case, so in the bulk, see, the overall integrated second chart can't change. You're going between two different critical theories. But there's some contribution to that, see, which comes from the boundary of field space, and that's what changes. Anyway. So I'm just going to do a lightning review of Google to motivate how I'm going to address this problem. And as a bunch of this talk, I'm going to go back a ways to work with Polly Talk from around the 80s, who looked at two-dimensional conformal field theory plus 2D gravity. In conformal case. So in conformal gauge, I write the metric g alpha beta as some scale factor times some fiducial metric, which I usually take to be the flat metric in two dimensions. And if I write down a sigma model, it looks naively like the scale factor completely decouples. But you know that's not true, of course, and the fact that it's not true is why string theory, super string theory is taken to live in 10 dimensions. So if I look at the sigma model action, sigma g theta x, so if I look at the sigma model action, certainly classically the scale factor decouples, it just scales out. But we know that quantum mechanically, when we define the measure properly, the measure factor itself, this is an integral over diffeomorphisms. And these measure factors now depend on the Lugol factor. And so quantum effects induce dynamics for this Lugol factor, which can be captured in some new action.
Brother, you know, yes. I changes because there'll be a loser goes.
I'll go into my file.
Yeah.
CIA
indexes.
Okay, so in the simplest case, it's believed and is slowly been confirmed. That after some rescaling, the Liouville action, just a multiplicative rescaling of the field, the Liouville action looks like this. Let me explain. S here is plus 1 if the original central charge of the matter sector, I'm looking at bosonic strings, is greater than 25, and minus 1 if C matter is less. 25. And I should actually reverse this. So if I have 25 or greater scalar fields to start with, the Liouville field appears with a wrong sign kinetic term and corresponds to a target space direction, which is Hamming. Whereas if I start with a subcritical string, I end up with the little field, space-like field. Gamma in particular is Q over 2 minus root plus 4 minus 2 cubed plus square root of C minus 25. Okay, so this is the basic story, but the punchline to take away from it is that in this case here, there seems to be a direct relation between the at the end of the day, I get a target space with a time-like direction, and there's a direct relation between that time-like direction and the scale factor of the theory. So this was pointed out by many people, including Schmidhuber and Zeppelin. So there should, therefore, you would expect, be some relation between the renormalization group properties of the underlying field theory and the time evolution of the time target space. I'll just say one more thing in passing. In this theory, because of this extra term here, there's a slight shift in the conformal dimension of composite operators. And the shift looks like this. But one point at the end of the day is that this is a quadratic equation with two roots, which is related to the underlying statement of the target space time evolutions regarding the second order equation. So there's already, people who did work on two-dimensional gravity back in the early 90s. In that work, there's already something of a relation between the target Liouville dependence and the underlying scaling dimensions of the operators that choose to be under the action. So let me talk in particular about gravitational messing. If I take my action to be, if I start with my action as being CFT plus Liouville theory, and add a relevant operator, that's is equal to lambda A O, okay, where this comes from the CF non-Liouville. I add this relevant operator, but this now has scaling dimensions. So you expect now that I should pick up some dependence on the Liouville field. Now, at the end of the day, in this full theory, I'm explicitly integrating over the Liouville field. So this requires that the full theory, including Liouville, be scale invariant, because I'm integrating over all scales. So when I integrate over phi, this means I should get some delta S becomes scale invariant. And the conjecture is that delta S can be written as giving the coupling some dependence on the Liouville factor. And to make sure it's scale dependent, I now just require that this full coupling here be marginal. So I need lambda A phi O A must be dimension 1-1. So if this has dimension delta, this has dimension 1 minus delta, 1 minus delta. So this means that I can write lambda as e to the alpha phi, where minus 1 half alpha minus q, this one minus delta. And this is a quadratic equation with two roots. And let me note that it has two roots. This is because at the end of the day, the full target space equations of motion to this equation are second order. So in the case, for example, of a tachyon, I expect solutions which grow and decay with time. For those of you who remember those days, or who've been working on two-dimensional string theory more recently in light of work by McGregor and Galenda, Fubinov, Melbourne, and Sundberg and company, you'll recall that Seiberg stated that e to the alpha plus phi corresponded to wrong branch dressing. And he just threw them out. Probably because they didn't match the matrix model calculations that people did at the time of correlators of correlators in conformal field theory coupled to gravity, and then e to the alpha minus phi objects on the right branch. On the other hand, I would argue that in general, more generally, you need both of these, because if I just thought of this as some background, if I just thought of the Luco plus the conformal field theory as some Lorentzian target space, clearly both of these behaviors are physical, or solutions to the equations of motion, and which one you choose is set by the initial conditions. In fact, more recently, suddenly, in particular, Seiberg and Shi showed how to turn on these wrong branch dressings by adding ZZ branches to the theory. So there seems to be some place for these. I'll also mention Sen. If I looked at open strings and I added to the action just lambda times the identity, this, in general, would get dressed to look like e to the phi, a e to the phi plus b e to the minus phi. And Sen pointed out that all of these boundary operators also correspond to physical processes involving tachyon dynamics, where if here's my tachyon potential, if I set b is equal to 0, it corresponds to the decay of the tachyon, whereas A equals 0 would correspond to building up a tachyon. And more generally, I can have, if both A and B are non-zero, I could have a process where I create a tachyon lump and then the tachyon lump decays. It's some dynamical creation and decay of a tachyon. That's known, I believe, as an escalator. So in open string theory, certainly we need both of these dressings. They correspond to the fact that the tachyon equations of motion are second order and they give us physical results. Okay. So with all of that, I'd like to give a slightly more general picture then about how the renormalization group flow, the underlying matter field theory, and the full time evolution of the background actually work. So I'm going to continue to talk. I want to start by reviewing some work from the mid-90s by Schmidhuber and Seidlin. Who were inspired by this very relation between the Louisville field and the time direction if I start with a supercritical normal field theory. So what they said is, well, let's take n greater than 25 scalar fields and we'll start with an action which may not even be conformal. So general 2D signal model. And so let's take this action angle with the two-dimensional gravity. Now again, because I'm integrating over all scale directions, at the end of the day, this plus the Liouville field should define a conformal field theory. So, so they said, well, if we couple the 2D gravity, this means S should go as something like d phi squared, where this is the Liouville field plus d phi x mu nu dx nu dx nu. So when we couple it to 2D gravity, the theory should get dressed up so that the whole thing is a good critical string theory, some sort of conformal field theory. Now, I've written down a fairly restrictive form of the metric. There's no off-diagonal term. This is a constant. I can certainly, locally within my space-time, choose coordinates where this is true. So I'm just, what they chose to do is just look at space-times of this form and think of them in this way as being some underlying two-dimensional field theory coupled to gravity. I can also add some very important Hamilton terms and so forth. Tachyons and so forth. So, certainly in particular, just look at the mass of the sector, so the graviton and dilaton. And what they said is, well, let me just take g mu nu phi. The limit towards B field, which I forgot to add. Well, let me just call these all different couplings which depend on time. So these will couple to different operators, dx, dx, and other composite operators. So I'm just calling all of these signal model couplings different lambdas. And they computed the 2D beta functions of this theory. And they found what they found was that the beta functions of the full theory could be expressed in terms of the beta functions of the underlying theory of the spatial directions of the target space, the non-gravitational field theory that you started with. So if I let beta a lambda be the beta functions for the non-gravitational 2D field theory, the theory I start with, then the statement that the total beta function vanished gives me the following equations of motion, O dot A minus I dot N dot A plus beta bar A lambda is 0. There were also some order of magnitude without terms of solutions to ignore. So here I have some equation of motion, some second order equation, where the beta function appears as a force term, if you like, in motion on the space of couplings. From this, you can start to see where.
Yeah, does this mean that negative friction?
Depends on the sign of phi.
Which is the wind of the wall?
What?
Negative phi or positive phi?
I forget to. But what I'm going to do is take a particular little bit of this dominance and show how this flat. The next statement I want to make is that when this phi dot gets large, and typically positive, this term will dominate over this term, and you recover a first order equation, which will look very much like the normalization group.
Sorry for the dumb question. What does dot mean?
I'm sorry. Thank you. It's not a dumb question. It's a lambda dot. If I let lambda now depend on phi, lambda dot A is D by D5.
Oh, it's D by D5.
Thank you.
And big five?
Big five is.
It's the little one?
Yes.
Okay, so this is D by D little.
Yeah, little, so I, as always, unfortunately, I think it's notation standard, so you have to make sure that I don't mix up my big and little files. Okay. So let me just mention in passing, so you can already see that the, certainly the underlying normalization group properties of the original non-gravitational theory show up in this equation. But we can also see that when phi dot is large, this means that phi dot lambda dot is typically much bigger than lambda double dot. And I get a first order equation again. Let me in particular take the linear dilatorium. So phi is dot. In the case of the linear dilaton, phi dot is a constant, and it's just q, which is root c minus 25 over 3. So now I have something that looks like q lambda dot a is equal to beta a. So that almost looks like a normalization group equations. But there's still this numerical factor out front. But it turns out in the limit of large C, that's all OK. Because really, the question now is, what am I going to call my scale such that I relate the beta function to a derivative of lambda with respect to some physical scale? A natural physical scale would be e to the gamma phi, where gamma is set for this to be dimension 2. So this is the same gamma that appears as a cosmological constant operator. Gamma is q over 2 minus 3 q squared over 4 minus the test already.
Yeah.
When I make this transformation, I find at the end of the day that lambda d lambda lambda is equal to beta. So I actually precisely get the normalization of equations to this. And this should have been different to point out. Also, if you take not this limit, but some more standard field theory, couple it to two-dimensional gravity, look very close to the fixed point, so, and for very small velocities, so this term is small, you get the gravitationally addressed scaling dimensions that hook up open and fall you off completely. But I want to finally get to what we did, which was to extend this to relevant perturbations and to take this lambda dot squared term something more seriously. Because when you do, you start to get a form of the equation that looks really nice. So I'm not going to go over the calculation because I'm out of time. But let me just say that we looked at relevant perturbations in some more general two-dimensional theory as before. So I left S CFT go into S CFT plus sum on A lambda A by O A Z, where I can turn on some large number of couplings all at once and address them with phi. I'm going to assume we know beta of lambda phi bar for phi bar constant, not dynamical, with S is equal to S CFT plus lambda phi bar A O A. Let me say what this means.
It's phi bar.
What? Okay, so phi bar is some constant background field here. So what I'm really saying is that take this, if I, in general, I'm looking at these perturbations of this two-dimensional theory. with the coupling to Louisville specified like so. Let's assume that before we coupled it to Louisville, so I'll just let the particular fiber be constant, it's not dynamical. Here I just have some perturbed conformal field theory, not coupled to 2D gravity, because it's just some non-dynamical thing, and I assume I know the beta functions for any one that actually feel. May or may not be true, there are certain examples where I can compute them. So what I want at the end of the day is how do the full beta functions for this theory relate to the underlying beta functions of the non-gravitational theory, which we might not have computed using interval interval systems techniques or something like that.
So this is not really any kind of, well, it's not really some option of approximation. Is it a method to say, well, here's where I'm starting from? If I know
the approximation comes in the fact that I'm going to do the expansion here.
So I was just looking, well, so far it doesn't look like it's just be approximating at all.
No, this isn't an approximate, but if you actually want to say anything.
If you do it order by order and fit it in, that's going to be.
That's what I'll do.
So are you thinking in terms of having this big neural ball that you're going to be like doing slow motion in there?
Yeah, well, I mean, really this is going to be best.
It's going to be best far from the wall, right?
Yeah, you have to be careful there. I mean, there's some sense in which you might be able to make it all self-consistent depending on whether you're turning on operators which are peaked inside the wall or not. Yeah, in general, you have to be careful about the wall because, as you say, the derivative expansion will break down.
Clearly breaks down.
Well, yeah, then you also have to worry about the fact that everything I'm doing is a tree level to begin with. Usually at this point of the talk, I actually go back and review a standard calculation due to people like Hardy and postulates of the beta function without gravity in the system, but in view of the time and distance sort of gives you the answer. What I do now is, let me just say one more thing. In general, I can write down when I write down theories of this form, the operator product coefficients also get corrections. Corrections of scaling, and I can write them down that if OA and OB are honest about scaling operators, I can write them down as lambda D C. So I can write down the OPE expansion in terms of some corrected OPE coefficients, which you can compute in conformal propagation theory, particular xenologic often any other.
No, that's a z bar over 2,
Sorry, it's a z over 2. So this is just you. One presentation of the OPE is that this operator here sits at the midpoint. Okay, so these are the two quantities we'll use, this guy and this guy, and I'll just write down what we found, the full beta function to be is going to be something like beta is equal to lambda double dot minus. Now, when I actually add, at the end of the day, I want the whole thing to be cut off dependent. But when I add these to the action to actually do contributions, I need to regulate, for example, the operator product coefficients and so on. So I'm going to adopt a point splitting regulator where z squared goes to something like point splitting regulator, so I think z squared goes to z squared plus epsilon squared. This is a regular delayed by assault, and that's not a literature. Not quite a point. There's no, it's just a, but it certainly regulates the UV things here. You also have to worry about IR divergences, and there's a whole procedure we're doing now that about the MLA buffer. One of them is anthropological service. But at the end of the day, I'm going to get something that looks on TTC, C, I think it's C, over C squared plus epsilon squared. So I get some equation, second order equation for this term, these quadratic terms here times something which looks like related to the operator, the ODE coefficients of the theory, and then a beta function equation. So let me just write this out schematically if some of them are suggestible. Of the local terms at the end of the day, terms of the terms of the logarithms of epsilon, which all cancel out the periods. So, in simpler form, what we get is something that looks like lambda of A plus lambda A BC and B. C is equal to minus beta bar. So this presentation should strike a chord, because this side looks an awful lot like the DD's expression. Lambda looks, therefore, looks an awful lot like the Stoppel connection. It has the right symmetry properties of it. And then this looks like some force term. Looks like a motion. We could generate this, for example, by something which looked like S is equal to Z, A, B, lambda dot A, lambda dot B, minus B. Where this is a metric, this is the connection with respect to the metric, and theta bar A would be Z, A, B, A, B, D. So this suggests that what you get is indeed something like geodesic motion on a space whose metric is something possible like the Zamolodchikov metric for the theory, with a force term, which is the beta function generated from a potential, which at least near a fixed point looks something like this function. Okay, so the last thing, the thing we're doing now, since I'm running out of time, the thing we're doing now is checking this explicitly in conformal perturbation theory, where you have a little bit more handle on what the beta functions look like, and we compute this somewhat more explicitly. And I'm just checking that at least near the fixed point, this statement is true. This is the Zamolodchikov metric.
Sorry, what was the Zamolodchikov metric?
The Zamolodchikov metric, so what I'm saying is if I take this action, this C is usually identified as the Zamolodchikov metric. Certainly that statement is made for massless fields. So now we're talking about massive fields, so I want to go back and at least check that. But certainly, this has the form of something generated from an action like this. So what I'd like to do, and what we're doing now finally, is just doing these calculations more precisely in conformal perturbation theory, which means I'm perturbing both in lambda and in lambda dot, and making sure that the structure holds and it's related to something.
Maybe I have some other question to Amanda. I guess Is there an independent, so one way you can extract this metric just by looking at geodesics, but is there an independent way how you can compute?
Yeah, you can compute the beta function for the G00 component in the space-time metric. And that will include this term.
And that's what you mean by checking, by doing that computation.
Well, one thing to do is just do the, you know what the Zeno-Logikov metric is, so we sort of basically test this term.
Okay.
And try and argue that it is, in fact, related to the connection to the Zeno-Logikov.
And you can explicitly compute if you can conform all the
situations. Yeah, that's right. So that's what we have to check out. At this point, I'm out of time. I'll just mention another thing is that this, with this action, I can write down a Hamilton-Jacobi equation governing the equations of Lesch. The Hamilton-Jacobi equations, let me just show you how the equations of Lesch look. If I have some Hamilton-Jacobi equations, I get something which looks like dTs plus h from the p is equal to dS by dQ, q is equal to 0. Once I solve for the action, then the momenta are related to the derivatives of the action with respect to the coordinates. Now, there's some relation between the partition function of the conformal field theory and the actual space-time effect of action. This relation can be made precise if I look at open string components, as Kutasov and Moore and Fernand and Kvetschin have done. And therefore, in that case, you would say that P is equal to dS by dQ. In this, the coordinates are the couplings themselves. This would be d lambda z, which is the one-point function of the operators. And I say this because, as I said at the beginning, there is an issue in that the renormalization group flow requires that you specify only the initial couplings, whereas more generally you have the couplings and the velocities or the couplings and the momentum. In this Hamilton-Jacobi formalism, momentum is related to one-point functions of the operators. So I should be changing the couplings, and I should be changing the one-point functions. This is precisely what you do in ADS50, where you can preserve both the couplings and the states themselves. So there's some analogy between this formulation of the target space equations of motion and the sort of Hamilton, this holographic energy description, which uses the Hamilton-Jacobi formulation based on equations of motion, pressure related to normalization equations. So I'll just mention that in passing. This is sort of actually the inspiration to this, what we're doing at some point.
Another question, just this nice equation that you eventually got to. Is the statement that this is a conjecture that gamma is somehow the cross-hopper symbol for the Zeno-Logikov metric, and you're checking that in the conformal perturbation theory?
Yes.
Is that the message?
Yes.
Okay. Now it's.
There's some metric which, at least, I believe here the fixed function is the Zeno-Logikov metric. Half the fixed point is a little bit less.
And I should think of this as the lowest order approximation to.
A derivative expansion.
So in particular, this should be good when derivatives are small.
Yeah.
Far from the walls.
That's right.
Away from strong coupling.
The kinds of things where you could do this precisely is imagine that my my original theory included a factor which was some minimal model with a nearly relevant operator and a fixed point nearby.